Welcome to On Our Watch, a podcast about coastal erosion and sustainability in Louisiana, as well as the implications for coastal systems worldwide. My name is Marion Evans. I'm a filmmaker and a producer of the documentary On Our Watch, a feature-length film about Louisiana's coastal land loss crisis. The film's director, Jonathan Evans, and I are proud to produce this podcast series that will continue to explore important coastal issues through conversations with local residents, community leaders, and experts. In this episode, we're speaking with Peter Wagoner. Peter is the Public Policy Director for Southeast Louisiana's Regional Economic Development Organization, Greater New Orleans, Inc. His portfolio encompasses infrastructure, insurance, and the environment at local, state, and federal levels. And now, our interview with Peter Wagoner.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Peter.
My pleasure.
So, you are the Public Policy Director for GNO Inc., which is the Regional Economic Development Organization for Southeast Louisiana. And I wanted to ask, how did you first become interested in pursuing public policy as a career?
I was really drawn to the public sector and economic development specifically because of the New Orleans Arena Smoothie King Center over there.
Right.
As a kid, I loved basketball. And I was born in 1992. And my interest in basketball was like 1999. The point is the arena was being built around that time. We were trying to attract an NBA franchise to New Orleans. And the success of the region came together, business leaders did, and managed to attract the Hornets, Pelicans from Charlotte. So it was a really some instant gratification there, and affirmed my love for basketball and my love for the region of New Orleans. And then once the Hornets were here, we had trouble getting people in seats. So I realized that, okay, we need a region with an economy and enough people to fill up the stadium to actually keep this team. And you need the policies at the local, state, and federal level that allows for a thriving region with enough people who make enough money to fill a basketball stadium. So, of course, that's all very superficial and really self-centric in that desire. And then a few years later, of course, Hurricane Katrina hit, which was a great wake-up call to think beyond yourself and to think about the great crisis that we face uniquely as a region environmentally, and the great crisis that the world faces based on what we have done with this earth. So ever since then, I've hoped my life would go in this direction, and I am blessed that my life has gone this direction. I am extremely concerned that life as a whole on Earth might, you know, we still are more and more carbon emittent. So we are not necessarily going in the right direction.
What are some of the main issues that GNO Inc. is focused on in terms of public policy?
So GNO Inc., we have two sides, kind of. So we have the business development and business environment side. So business development is traditional economic development, essentially. It's business attraction, retention, expansion. So we are trying to get businesses to consider New Orleans for their office or industrial operation. And we're trying to help businesses that are here expand and keep them here. And the public policy side is the business environment side. So our goal is to create a region with a thriving economy that allows for a positive quality of life for everyone across our 10 parishes. So that is kind of open-ended in terms of what our policy priorities should be. Mm-hmm. It's basically, it can be anything that improves or maintains quality of life and makes this a positive business environment. So lots of what our policy focus is on incentive programs and general, you know, business licensing, the tax structures, things that immediately affect businesses and workers and their bottom lines, respectively. But in Louisiana and in South Louisiana, we recognize that our economy is intrinsically linked to the environment. So I am honored to work for GNO Inc. because we understand that, and we understand that coastal restoration is imperative for economic success here. We're also blessed in Louisiana because lots of our economy is naturally linked to natural resources. So we understand that it all goes hand in hand, and it really has in Louisiana forever. I believe that we are realizing that it is complementary. Like, the more natural resources and the better that we treat them, the better our economy will be. Of course, in the past, sometimes our natural resources have been sacrificed for the economy. But I do believe that our companies located here, our leaders located here, everyone really understands that we have to, it will benefit our economy if we protect our natural resources and the other way around.
Right. So one of the things that I was interested to talk to you about today is your knowledge of insurance and specifically how insurance works for coastal communities here in Southeast Louisiana that are subject to frequent floods. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit about the work that you're doing in that realm?
Yeah, so insurance is certainly compartmentalized. So when we talk about insurance, you have, I'm overgeneralizing, but if I'm a person, you have to worry about your auto insurance, you have to worry about your homeowner's insurance, and in Louisiana, you have to worry about flood insurance. So Louisiana per capita has the highest number of flood insurance policies across the country. We also have had the largest number of claims for the National Flood Insurance Program. So if we're talking about flood insurance, it's very unique because it is generally not private insurance companies. It is the National Flood Insurance Program that was created by Congress in 1968 in response to the private sector pulling out of flood. They said it's too unpredictable. We don't want to write flood coverage anymore. So flood coverage wasn't really available. And I believe this was like kind of in response to Camille and Betsy and some floods. So Congress created the National Flood Insurance Program. This program was created with, it really is admirable what Congress did at that time. They created a program that was supposed to provide flood insurance coverage at reasonable rates to people to allow economies and communities to continue to exist and to thrive in coastal and water adjacent places. And they also created this program as a program and not an insurance company. So the program was designed to really mitigate flood risks and make participating communities adopt floodplain management standards so that they put their communities at less risk. So the program was quite successful until Hurricane Katrina. So Hurricane Katrina was, the program was actually operating, it had a few years in the red, but it was operating, it was basically paying for itself, you know, for a few decades at least. And then Katrina hit and it put 80% of New Orleans underwater, and it did so much damage to the program. The program always had a borrowing capacity and was always designed, and well, it was never really designed to handle those types of catastrophes. The federal government was supposed to basically let the program off the hook if something like that was to happen. The federal government did forgive some of that debt, but it's still, the program is $20.5 billion in debt to this day. Wow. And it was it had $0 of debt at Katrina. And Harvey happened subsequent to that, mm-hmm. Which was another big burden. A little bit of debt was forgiven after that too. But the program has never gotten back to zero. So ever since 2005, it has kind of been both a hot button and hands-off issue by Congress. They don't really want to touch it, and they don't like it. If I am judging this as an insurance company that's $20 billion in debt, it's a huge failure probably, right? But it was never meant to be an insurance company. It was always meant to be a program to really help communities exist and protect themselves and be insured and reduce risk exposure. So it's kind of gotten confusing. The program is extremely important to Louisiana because we are, much of Louisiana is mapped in a flood zone. If you are mapped in a flood zone, you have to buy flood insurance to fulfill your mortgage requirements. So if I am in some other state that might not be mapped in flood zones, it doesn't really affect me much because I don't have to buy flood insurance. The fact is that 99% of counties since 1996 have had a flood event. So everyone across the country should be considering flood insurance and purchasing flood insurance. And the reality is that flood maps are largely outdated across the country. However, those maps determine whether I actually have to buy it or not. And many places that are at flood risk don't have to buy it. Louisiana, for the most part, is at flood risk, is mapped accordingly, and does have to purchase flood insurance, meaning that Louisiana is one of the main voices in the flood insurance conversation nationally, which is very, very difficult because we have a very small population and we have some amazing leaders in our federal delegation, but we do not have enough, a large enough federal delegation to really affect change on our own. So we have trouble getting Congress to act on the National Flood Insurance Program. For example, the program needs to be reauthorized on a regular basis. The last long-term reauthorization expired in 2017. Since 2017, the program's been reauthorized on a short-term, like a few months basis, 30 times.
Okay.
Because Congress just keeps kicking the can and does not have enough focused attention on taking action and reforming the program for the betterment of the program and communities. So what we do at GNO Inc. is actually run a national coalition. So we established this coalition in 2013 in response to the long-term reauthorization that Congress did pass in 2012. This reauthorization changed how flood insurance premiums were calculated in some way, and was going to raise rates overnight. So GNO Inc. decided to form a national coalition in response to this. Because it's a federal program, you have to have a national coalition. You have to affect congressional offices everywhere. So we established that coalition. It grew slowly until Superstorm Sandy. And then we had instant, because New Jersey and New York had tons of flooding and flood claims, we had Schumer support and really important political support. We grew quickly and we repealed a few provisions that were of concern in 2014. Fast forward to 2021, FEMA, by their administrative authority, without Congress passing any law, put in place Risk Rating 2.0, which is another new method of calculating flood insurance premiums. So FEMA's goal is to price your flood insurance policy based on your risk and your individual property's risk. So the methodology blends together dozens, in some cases, of rating factors. So it will say your first floor height, it will say your distance to water, it will say the number of floors you have in your house. It's basically property factors, geographic factors, and just like policy factors, like what your deductible is, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So FEMA rolled out this program with maybe good intentions, because it is a decent idea to price, to communicate to people what their flood risk is. Mm-hmm. One of the problems is that Risk Rating 2.0, FEMA basically has divorced the flood map to the price of the premium. So it really goes to show that your flood zone really doesn't mean, like, I'm at that much risk. And people for decades believe that your flood zone really was indicative of your risk. Mm-hmm. And Risk Rating 2.0 shows a totally different number. So that's very confusing to people and very unfair to floodplain managers who have worked in I think 22,000 participating communities who relied on those maps and have worked really hard on those maps. So it was basically, even though it had been in the works for a few years, it was kind of an overnight change that was really, really poorly communicated by FEMA. FEMA hired a contractor to develop this methodology, so FEMA maybe didn't even have all the information to really communicate to get all the information out that they should have in preparation to launch this program in a way that people really understood it.
So, I mean, what do you see as like the policy solutions to helping lowering these costs, and how do you get more political attention on Louisiana? And, you know,
I think how you get more political attention on Louisiana is explain Louisiana's economic value to the country. Mm-hmm. So the FEMA administrator who we are getting along with right now, and he used to be the lieutenant governor of Nebraska.
Okay.
Nebraska has lots of farmers. All of that grain goes through the port of South Louisiana in our region. So those farmers, their livelihoods depend on flood insurance coverage that the workers at the Port of South Louisiana have. The Port of South Louisiana cannot operate without workers who cannot afford to live there. So everything is connected. Mm-hmm. Louisiana is, and by nature of the river, always will be, maybe the most important place for all of the Midwest, you know. So much of the country will always rely on Louisiana for geographical purposes. Of course, that's not even talking about our fuel and fisheries and technologies and other services that we provide for the country, but really making people understand that none of Louisiana's issues only affect Louisiana.
Right.
And I think that is how we are going to solve our problems.
So how does coastal restoration play a role in the work that you do as public policy director? And what are some of the coastal programs that GNO Inc. has going on?
Yeah, so also about a decade ago, GNO Inc. Put together the Coalition for Coastal Resilience and Economy, or CCRE. So a decade ago, we noticed that there wasn't one unified voice of the business community to speak in support of the Coastal Master Plan and all coastal restoration efforts and all coastal restoration concerns. There were many business leaders engaged and many business leaders who cared about the coast and understood its value, but there wasn't a single voice that accounted for all those voices and put it forward in an education and advocacy perspective at local, state, and federal levels. So we created this coalition. It's formed by oil and gas executives, property developers, real estate interests, interior designers, bankers, just all across the board. And we are unified to speak in support of CPRA's work, to speak in support of more funding for coastal activities at the local, state, and federal level, to speak in support of good business practices like ESG activities that corporations and companies can implement that benefit our coast, and to just really demonstrate the business community's understanding that coastal restoration and economic well-being are hand in hand.
Yeah. And so you were speaking about that earlier. I kind of wanted to touch on that again. Like, how is the health of the environment linked to the health of the economy, specifically here in Louisiana?
Absolutely. I think the most illustrative example is what happens after hurricanes.
Right.
So hypothetically, if we had the coast that we once had, Katrina could have never happened because it would have been slowed down and maybe would have never resulted in a wind speeds and everything that resulted in levee failures, you know. But the more coast you have, the less business disruption you have and the more business continuity you have and the quicker your employees are able to return to work and the fewer power lines are down and the fewer light outages happen. Again, just like Katrina, New Orleans is still suffering from inches or feet of water that stood on our streets and suffocated our drain lines, and really we would be seeing infrastructure failures regardless, but that is part of why we're seeing so many infrastructure failures and why so many people complain about the streets. So coastal restoration is invaluable to protecting assets in Louisiana, and that previous example was just to basically like white collar workers. The other side of that are incredible industrial operations and refineries in Louisiana. Of course, Louisiana has about 50% of the refining capacity in the country. The more coast there is, the more that those refineries are protected, and the less oil prices will spike after storms. And again, this goes back to why it's important to the national economy. Mm-hmm. Similarly, Louisiana has port facilities that will be out of service after a hurricane and could be out of service for a few fewer days if there was more coastal protection. So we understand that it's just better for business. There'll be less economic losses with more coastal restoration. The other side of it from the GNO Inc. perspective is it is very helpful in attracting businesses if we can demonstrate all of the investment that Louisiana and local communities are putting into our coast to really in some ways reverse this problem and to demonstrate that we understand the problem and there is a master plan to do the best that we can to resolve or stabilize the problem, and that we will be here in some capacity because we have to be here in some capacity, and you should consider that in your decision about where to locate your business.
Right, it's so true. Like, not only will having a healthy, thriving environment, it causes less disruption to businesses, more people want to stay here, but also there's like a lot of jobs in the coastal sector.
Absolutely. So we project, this annual plan. So the coast, the CPRA has a 6-year master plan and an annual plan. Mm-hmm. So GNO Inc. actually works with CPRA to do job projections. And again, it's projection, so we can't promise that this is exact, but this is going to be in FY 2025, it's going to be the most money ever spent in 1 year on coastal projects. Before we get excited about that, there is a coastal fiscal cliff coming up in 2031, so this is maybe the most that will ever be spent in 1 year. And again, hopefully not, but that's what the projection are. However, we project that the $1.7 billion that will be spent this year, or is planned to be spent, will create 11,000 direct jobs. And I think it's about like $670 million in labor income for people, and not necessarily people in Louisiana, but as an economic development organization in Louisiana, we hope that as many of those jobs and as much of that labor income as possible goes back home to Greater New Orleans.
Right, yeah. Well, thank you so much, Peter, for talking to me today.
Yeah, it's been fun. There's so much more.
Yes.
We didn't even talk about property insurance, which is the biggest issue that
next
people
time.
Say.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, but really proud of what y'all are doing and really proud of everyone thinking about this, and just encourage everyone in Louisiana and everyone outside of Louisiana to understand that this is a problem that affects the country and that anyone can be part of the solution.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very well said. Well, thank you.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to On Our Watch. We hope you enjoyed our discussion with Peter Wagoner. Don't forget to subscribe to On Our Watch on your favorite podcast app to be notified about future episodes. You can find our feature-length documentary on our watch, as well as a video version of today's episode, in the links below. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with another episode next week. This podcast is made possible through support from the Greater New Orleans Foundation and executive produced by Bruno UK Steiner.